pleasure to be here. I wish I could have been here for the rest of the talks this morning. I'm afraid that I was stuck in a rather B-grade hotel in Minneapolis. So, but what I'd like to do is talk to you a bit about some of the work that we've been doing and thinking about in the area of the biosphere and climate change and climate change solutions. But first, before I say that, is just to continue on the introduction. BioCAP, which is the organization I'm coming here to represent, is a national not-for-profit research foundation. We were founded through this by the support of industry and provincial governments in 1998. We were incorporated in 2000, and we received federal funding to help us take action in this area earlier in January, basically, of this year. We operate out of Queen's University, and we're involved in coordinating funding and communicating university research that explores biological approaches to mitigation of climate change. In the talk today, what I'd like to do is touch on three things. I'd like to say a few things of the biosphere and climate change solutions. I'm assuming, I had hoped to know this by now, that a number of the other talks today have talked about some of the key challenges and issues around climate change. So I'll just go right to the biosphere and the role that the biosphere could play in addressing climate change issues. Then touch on some of the opportunities and challenges in this area, specifically in Canada. And then maybe if I have a few minutes at the end, I'll mention what the sort of things that BioCAP is doing. Climate change solutions can be separated into the four areas of reduce, remove, replace, and respond. Reduce is we need to be looking at ways of reducing greenhouse gas emissions at the source. This may involve behavioral change, certainly improved efficiency of processes such as transportation, industry, and agriculture. Remove is, I'm sure that some of the other speakers today may have touched on the concept of carbon sinks, of actually developing technologies for removing greenhouse gases from the atmosphere and building them into solid carbon dioxide on the planet Earth through geological processes, trapping them in oceans and through biological systems. Replacing is looking at lower greenhouse gas intensive forms of energy. This may involve changing fossil fuel technologies, but also wind, solar, biomass, nuclear, hydro, or other sorts of energy systems or energy chemicals and materials that have lower greenhouse gas intensity. And respond is another very important component here. We need to learn how to respond to climate change. The top three of these R's are really involved in the mitigation to prevent a 3- to 4-fold increase in atmospheric CO2. Because it's the pattern of human emissions over the time says we're going to be heading into this range over the next couple hundred years. An adaptation is really learning how to cope with a 2-fold increase in atmospheric CO2, which I think even the fairly most optimistic of environmentalists might suggest is going to be a challenge for us to move towards. We are now looking at about a 1.3-fold increase in today's 1.3 to 1.4. The biological systems of planet Earth have an important role to play in all four of these R's. And this is especially true in Canada, where we have such a vast forestry and agricultural resource. For example, in Canada, agriculture accounts for about 10% of our greenhouse gas emissions in this country. And it's not in the form of carbon dioxide mostly. It's mostly in the form of nitrous oxide and methane. The biosphere is also a tremendous opportunity to play a role in removing and sequestering carbon, pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and sequestering it in vibrant forest or in agricultural soils. Biomass, the product of plant photosynthesis, and is also a potential source of energy, chemicals, and materials that can help to relieve our ever-increasing demand on fossil fuels. And as long as one continues to grow the forests and the agricultural systems and maintain the carbon stocks, it's a greenhouse gas, essentially zero or a greenhouse gas energy source, or very low. And, of course, in responding to climate change issues, we need to be able to look at the effects of climate change on natural ecosystems and on agriculture, and that's going to require major response, especially in Canada, where we are going to be seeing major impacts of climate change compared to most other parts of the world. The Canadian biosphere is basically a national opportunity and a global responsibility in this area because we're one of the only countries in the world that has a carbon cycle that looks like this, where our biological carbon cycle, or these fat arrows, are more than order of magnitude higher than our anthropogenic emissions from fossil fuels. And our fossil fuel emissions of 200 megatons, at least 2,800 megatons, and these are conservative numbers, of carbon are being taken up and released every year from our biological systems. So the things that we need to be thinking about doing and looking at ways of doing is to, first of all, reduce those greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from agricultural systems. The ones that are perhaps not carbon dioxide so much, but the nitrous oxide and methane that are helping to force climate change. And there's certainly a role there, reducing those emissions. Also, to enhance the size of this down arrow, till we have the biological systems take up more carbon than what they release to the atmosphere. And essentially, what that is going to mean is we will be increasing the carbon stock in Canada, both in our forests, in our agricultural lands, and perhaps in our wetlands as well. And then we need to be looking at some of this carbon stream that's going back to the atmosphere and saying, what biomass can we divert from that carbon stream and help build it into bio-based energy, chemicals, and materials? Or grow crops or trees and other, take our other biological resources and feed them into the production of bio-based energy, chemicals, and materials. That can provide to provide the needs of society and reduce this ever-increasing demand on fossil fuels. So in order to do this, we need to look at carbon sinks without additional greenhouse gas emissions. This is going to be very important because the first thing you think about when you want to enhance the growth of plants is you get out there and put on some nitrogenous fertilizers. Well, not only is there greenhouse gases involved in the production of those fertilizers, there's also the nitrous oxide emissions that come out from the unused fertilizer that is being produced. So increasing the size of the carbon sink is going to have to be done carefully to make sure that one's not just replacing offsetting another emission and increasing another emission with an increase in carbon sinks. Secondly, it's important in managing the carbon cycle to address the climate change issue is to look at coupling the carbon stocks that one increases by enhancing the size of this down arrow, into the production of bio-based products. It might not be all right away, but certainly over coming decades, we need to be shifting to look at our biological resources as a source of energy, chemicals, and materials. The federal government and the provinces agree on one thing. They don't agree on a lot these days, but one thing they do agree on for sure is the importance of the biosphere and greenhouse gas management. In all of the discussions in this area, this seems to be common. The recognition that plants have been in the business of managing greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide, and solar energy for about 400 million years. So we got something to learn from plants, and by adapting and using biological systems, there is an opportunity that we shouldn't let go, especially in Canada, when we have such a huge plant and biological resource. They also agree on the need for carbon and emission trading. And this allows the biological systems, perhaps, to help address some of the problems within the energy and other sectors that have large emissions. One area that the feds and provinces don't agree on is the climate change plan, which was released a couple weeks ago. But what I've done is I thought it was useful to look at that plan as an example of some of the thinking that's going on, at least in the federal government, in terms of the role of the biosphere. These are estimated emissions in the year 2010 from various sources. You notice that the ones in color down here have sort of a biological source. The landfill gas of methane coming off is a release from biological activities and agricultural emissions of nitrous oxide and methane. If you look at the plan that has been put forward a few weeks ago, that accounts for about 180 of the 240 megatons gap. As a part of that plan, is under the actions underway in the next steps, the biological systems have been identified as a significant component of a longer-term strategy. And there's in two areas. In the actions underway, about 33 million tons of carbon dioxide are seen as part of going towards reaching this overall emission reduction requirement of 240 megatons of CO2. An additional 40 megatons of CO2 is being proposed as being part of next steps. Because what I want you to note here is that even though agriculture and biological systems perhaps contribute about 10 to 14%, around 14% on the high end, of biological, of greenhouse gas emissions in this country, they're being looked at in terms of the solutions of somewhere upwards to 40% of the 180 megaton mark, and how much of this remainder will be seen as as tapping into biological solutions, it remains to be determined. Probably not as much as 40%. I would have a hard time seeing how it could happen. But even this, I think it's really important to recognize that, in the plan that's on the table, there is a significant role for biological systems in helping to develop climate change solutions. To realize this, there are some significant research and development challenges. And what I'd like to do is to walk through some of the biological opportunities, identify some of the opportunities, and also touch on some of the challenges that we might see as we try to move forward if we're going to implement anything like this, or certainly implement any other plan where there's a significant role of biological systems to address climate change. So opportunities and challenges. The first one is to focus on the area of reduce. Look at the greenhouse gas emissions. There, as we said before, about 10% of our emissions come from Canada's emissions are been associated with agriculture. Agricultural soils, nitrous oxide, and it's really important to note here that nitrous oxide is incredibly potent greenhouse gas. Every molecule of nitrous oxide has 310 times the global warming potential of carbon dioxide. Methane also is very high, not as high as nitrous oxide, but methane is about 21 times higher than carbon dioxide. And the agricultural emissions are predominantly from enteric fermentation. That really means cow burps. Cows have a ruminant, they have an anaerobic digestive system in their stomach, and they can produce methane as a result of their digestive processes, and that methane comes out in burps mostly, and this results in quite a large global warming potential when you look at all the cows in Canada. Manure management is another issue. This is not only cow manure, but other types of manure. It produces both methane and nitrous oxide, depending on how it's managed and how it's handled. Agricultural soils are a source primarily of nitrous oxide. This comes as a result of primarily denitrification processes. That is a biologically mediated process by which bacteria take nitrate and basically they reduce it, and a byproduct of it is nitrous oxide, and that comes off into the atmosphere. And this creates one of the problems in agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. Some of the opportunities here is that really have been, if you look over the past 20 or 30 years, relatively few incentives to reduce agricultural greenhouse gases. There's not a great economic benefit of doing this. And so there's probably some low-hanging fruit here. And we really don't, there's only really been a pretty strong focus in this area in the last few years, and people are trying to get their handle on what's possible to reduce asking questions about how much emissions are. What we do know is that a number of experiments that have been done to date have identified up to 30% reductions in greenhouse gas emissions have been observed by changing the way fertilizer nitrogen is used and how it's applied, how it's managed, altering animal feed to alter the amount of methane that's produced from animals, or to use feed additives in the additives to increase the efficiency. Food is converted into cow instead of into methane, and to look at reductions in the greenhouse, and to look at the manure management practices. There's a lot of different opportunities there. The other thing that's important as an opportunity here is that cleaning up greenhouse gases also addresses a number of other farm issues, such as your input cost. Farmers don't want to see the fertilizer nitrogen they've paid so much for go up as nitrous oxide into the atmosphere. They prefer to see it go into the crop. So there's some other input benefits if we can decrease the amount. If that's happening, it would make more nitrogen available for the crop. Water and odor pollution are other issues. If we clean up the emissions of these of nitrous oxide and other greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere, we're also going to be cleaning up other water and odor pollution issues in many cases. The challenge, though, on agricultural greenhouse gas emissions, there are many. One of the first challenges is we really don't have good numbers on what agricultural emissions really are. The numbers I showed you in the previous slide were from the International Panel on Climate Change. They're basically coefficients of the IPCC numbers. We don't have really solid numbers of how they are affected by region, by climatic effects factors, and by agricultural practices. So we need to understand the processes. We need to develop new measurement tools. It might be electronics, new instrumentation, remote sensing, or models for scaling measurements. And we need to apply the tools to develop coefficients to inform national inventory and management models, and basically contribute ultimately to identifying what are the best management practices for agriculture that are going to result in significant emissions, and how can we implement these within the next few years. The new technologies and management strategies are also another opportunity or challenge, actually an opportunity for research and for research to contribute to this area. Looking for crops or microbes that have better nitrogen use efficiency or less methane or nitrous oxide emissions. There are certainly areas, good reason to think from biological reasons that this is possible. And in fact, some technologies, some of it even from Edmonton, have been developed for greater nitrogen use efficiency in cropping systems. And there may be opportunities to develop more of these technologies and to bring them into application. Also, it's possible to look at agricultural practices and think differently about the way we do agriculture in this country, and maybe provide the incentives and the information to the farmers to help in the shifting the way we do agriculture to reduce emissions through practices or how we handle manure, etc. The third challenge here is to find a cost-effective implementation strategy. We need to explore what are the other costs and benefits. I think it's quite clear when you look at examples in this area that farmers are not going to do this solely for the purpose of greenhouse gas reduction. There has to be other there has to be other benefits, and there has to be benefits, economic benefits for the farmer for sure. So we need to explore the other costs, benefits, what are the barriers, and what are policy options, exploring issues in socioeconomics, law, risk, and policy. If I could take the second one of the three, I'm only going to be dealing with the top three in the mitigation. So the second one is to deal with the opportunity for removal and carbon sinks and biosphere carbon sinks. This under forests, they're under the Kyoto Agreement, you might recall about 18 months ago, in the Bonn Agreement, in the Bonn meeting and in the Marrakesh meeting a year or so ago, Canada basically is now allowed. We got an agreement to claim credit for net forest carbon stock changes of up to 44 million tons of carbon dioxide per year, or about 12 million tons of elemental carbon when it's translated. Now, the federal government in its recent plan, as I showed in the previous diagram a few minutes ago, has estimated that 20 megatons of this carbon is business as usual, and 24 megatons is going to require perhaps additional activities. Now, that 24 megatons of carbon dioxide represents approximately a 0.1% increase in the carbon stock of 125 million hectares of Canada's production forest. These are rough numbers. That's probably a conservative, that's probably a high estimate of what it is. It's probably even less than that. So what we're looking at is developing, we'll talk about some of the challenges of that, but if Canada can actually demonstrate an increase of that and put practices in place to increase carbon stocks by 24 million tons by 0.1% increase in the carbon stock, that's a possible, that could potentially be claimed under international agreements. Under agriculture, under Kyoto, there's no really limits to credits for increases in soil carbon stocks. So potentially any increase in that measurable and quantitative and demonstrable increase in carbon stocks in agricultural soils could be claimed. And the federal government estimates that about 10 million tons of CO2 is business as usual. That's basically already underway. We're already doing it. And another 5.8 million tons per year is possible. And some of that 5.8, it's not clear whether the government sees that as all carbon stocks. Some of it might be emission reductions in agriculture. But certainly between the two, 5.8 million. The wetlands are also an area that's attracting a lot of interest. Is it because wetlands are both a sink for carbon and a source for methane, especially if it gets anaerobic in the wetlands. So there's an opportunity. First of all, we need to understand whether it's a net source or a sink, and basically how we can manage wetlands or even perhaps use wetlands by putting more wetlands in place to enhance the sink and to find ways of reducing the methane source from those systems. Now, there are some challenges, significant challenges, in this area for research challenges. The first one, when you think about it, is when you're measuring 0.1% change against a very large background, that becomes a measurement problem. And measuring carbon stocks against a very large background is a major issue. A number of research groups across Canada are working on this in federal and provincial governments and in universities. And the idea is some of the things that are needed here are to improve some of our measurement tools, not only instrumentation, remote sensing models, but other sorts of tools for scaling, etc. We need to develop coefficients to inform national models and inventories. And we need to understand the carbon cycle. If Canada is going to, and other countries of the world are going to start to manage the biological carbon cycle with an eye to greenhouse gases, and we're going to need to understand how this carbon cycle works much better than we do now. What can be done to enhance carbon stocks? We need to identify what are the best management practices in the forestry sector, in the agriculture sector, for enhancing carbon stocks. And we need to develop them, and also it's possible, to develop crops, trees, pest control strategies, new management technologies that will enhance these carbon stocks. There's a big opportunity here for new technology development and for application of that technology within our agricultural systems that will enhance the health and vitality of those systems at the same time as dealing with greenhouse gases. We also need a cost-effective implementation strategy in this area as well. We need to explore, again, many of the decisions for farmers or for foresters are not going to be done based on carbon credits alone. You're going to have to couple to other benefits, and we need to explore what those are and identify the barriers and look at policy options that could be picked up to make this happen. The third area that I'd like to touch on is the area of bio-based energy chemicals and materials. And biomass is essentially all the biological systems. The bodies of those animals or plants become the biomass. We already have a very large food, feed, and fiber industry in Canada called agriculture and forestry that produces the food, feed, and fiber. And there's a large waste carbon stream coming from that system. What we're looking at, perhaps, is a development of a new bioeconomy where we can use biomass not only as a source of food, feed, and fiber, but it's to provide energy and fuels such as ethanol, diesel, methane, hydrogen, methanol, for example, commodity chemicals that can be used to feed into the chemical industry, and materials such as plastics. In the process of setting up this carbon stream, this biorefinery, as we call, it's also possible to pull off higher value compounds like biocatalysts, enzymes. Our specialty compounds, like pharmaceuticals, could be easily seen as part of this the biorefinery. So this biorefinery is in many ways similar to the petrochemical refinery system that has been evolved and developed over the last 100 years. We're obviously in the very, very early stages of this, and there's no threat to the petrochemical industry at all, I can assure you. What we are doing, though, is looking at the potential to see the growth of emerging new industry in Canada where we can provide some of some of these energy chemicals, materials, and specialty chemicals, et cetera, that will provide some ways towards reducing our demand on greenhouse gas intensive industrial processes. One of the big questions, though, that we're always asked is, can biomass provide a significant part of our needs, both in Canada and internationally? I think it's very clear that biomass internationally is gone, and few countries are around the world look like Canada with a large biomass resource. But in Canada, and there is an opportunity potentially, and in due to comparison, what I've done here is a calculations of looking at the energy, and we're going through the units of megatons of carbon per year, comparing energy systems with biological systems. So here's a comparison. The United States and Canada, United States, these are Canada's greenhouse gas emissions in 1998 and the American greenhouse gas emissions, and showing which ones come from fossil fuels. If you look at the size of our agriculture and forest harvest in Canada every year, and you also put it in terms of carbon, units of millions of tons of carbon harvested every year in agriculture and forestry, you'll see that Canada is, compared to fossil fuel, about 81% of our agriculture and forestry produce we harvest an amount of carbon equivalent to 81% of the amount of carbon that we actually, that's found within our fossil fuel carbon sources. United States is 32%. Even though the forestry and agriculture sector in the United States is bigger than that in Canada, as a proportion of the greenhouse gas emissions, it's quite a bit smaller. So it's relative to our greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels, Canada's forestry and agriculture production is about 2.5 times larger than that of the United States. So if you just focus on the left-hand diagram there, it's exactly the same as the one in the previous slide, but I think it's very important to note that in the bottom here now I've shown the energy content. This is biomass energy content compared to oil, coal, and gas. And biomass is a relatively low energy, carbon energy intensive material, and therefore it's very important to put that into consideration when you're looking at getting energy chemicals materials out of biomass. The amount of energy that we get out of the fossil fuel sector is about 8 exajoules per year of energy come from gas, oil, and coal. If we look at the bio, then we use this is with these ones. We look at how much we can get out of how much our agriculture and forest harvest is from biomass. It's about 4 exajoules per year, so it gets down to about half or 50%. That's obviously important. We can't stop eating and building houses, etc., and use all of that agricultural resource. But it's very important to note that about 50% of the carbon going into involved in agriculture and forest harvest, a little more than 50% actually, is really residual or waste carbon. So there's this very large waste carbon stream that has the potential to provide 25% of the energy we now get from fossil fuels. And this is not without planting in it. You don't have to plant another hectare of trees or more crops. These numbers are basically looking at the waste coming off our existing stream. The challenge is here. We need to identify opportunities, bottlenecks, and barriers, and the research and identify the research and development gaps and priorities. We need integrative assessment modeling, socioeconomic analysis, life cycle analysis, and technology assessments. What things are realistic? What are realistic in the supply of the biomass energy, also in the ability to convert it into economic products? We need new technology development in biotechnology, chemistry, especially water-based chemistries, as compared to fossil fuels, petrochemical sectors based on non-aqueous, largely, at water-based chemistries, and then chemical and mechanical engineering. And then how to implement, to explore options for policy change and technology development, and look at the public acceptance, the acceptance of, say, genetically modified organisms, which I suspect that you might have heard a bit about in some of the work of Bill Leese, et cetera, this morning. The drivers, there are a number of drivers for a bio-based economy that involves the various things that I've talked about. Greenhouse gas is but one of them. Farming crisis and rural development issues, very important in Western Canada, but in all parts of Canada. The innovation agenda, the desire to move towards higher value jobs and add innovations that could be exported potentially to other countries. And then the other environmental benefits I've mentioned before. The last one is an extremely important one as well, and this is energy security and energy supply issues. This is the main driver in the United States. The United States, is after September 11th, is very concerned about their supply of domestic supply of energy, and they're looking very carefully at biomass and bio-based products as a source of homegrown energy systems. It's not going to provide all their needs. It's not going to provide all our needs, but it is an important element within the mix. If I could just spend one or two minutes, I'll talk briefly about what BioCap's doing in this area. We are an organization which has a mandate to ensure that the Canadian university research community contributes effectively to national efforts, the various national efforts that are aimed at for the sustainable development of the biosphere to reduce emissions, enhance carbon sinks, and produce bio-based energy, chemicals, and materials. Our approach is we recognize that we have a number of stakeholders, governments and government policy people, environmental non-governmental organizations, and industry and producer groups, etc. They have needs, and some of these organizations are willing to provide dollars. They're also requiring, though, insights and technologies for policy and investment decisions. And these are, but we have also the other side of it, the national research community. Now, one could expect, and indeed, there's good evidence that the industry and the producer group needs at the stakeholder need are pretty much in touch with their. Research that's going on with those organizations, same with the NGOs, same with the government. It's the university research community that's often the wild card here. There's a large capacity there, and the role of BioCap is to try to find the gap that brings these various groups together, but especially the university research community. And we do this by building partnerships. We build a number of levels of partnership. First of all, we take some of the resources, and we build partnerships with funding partners, other granting agencies that are involved in funding in the university research. We also build partnerships within the research community with the industry partners, provincial NGO partners, and the university community and to build research teams that will help to address the research gaps and priorities that in our committees identify. The whole overall goal for this, and since January of this year, we've taken about $7.4 million and leveraged it to more than $25 million of research activity that will be going on over the next few years to try to address some of the issues that I've talked about today. I'm not going to go through each of these in detail, but basically we see our role is looking at natural ecosystems through to forestry, look at agricultural systems. We need to understand some of the fundamental principles and processes. We need to gain insights and develop the technologies, and then we need to propose implementation strategies and policy options that our various stakeholders can look at. And choose what is optimal. The outcomes, there are a number of different outcomes here. Essentially, over the last year, we've put together a number of programs. Some of these are very, very early stages. Some of these are more well-developed. And some of these are groups, for example, the Canadian Foundation of Climate and Atmospheric Sciences has already set up this group. Where we're working, this is looking at coupled models. We're working with them to provide, make sure they have the data they need to provide and to help to enhance and expand their efforts. The Sustainable Forest Management NCE out of Edmonton here has been around for a number of years, and we're working with them and we have agreement with them to help co-fund research in the carbon management side. There are a number of FluxNet Canada was just launched this year, a $12.5 million initiative that BioCap is involved in starting with in partnership with NSERC and CFCAS. There are a number of other groups, a green chemistry group here on bioproducts, and an agriculture group, and an afforestation group that we're working with. They're in the early stages of developing. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions.